Hi, my name is Jodi Amburi, and I'm a writer and critic on race, culture, and health equity. I'm also the author of Authentic, The Myth of Bringing Your Full Self to Work. Here are five insights from my book. Insight one, center the voices of the most impacted. For years, I've heard the phrase, bring your full, authentic self to work as a way to support diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives within the workplace. In public, I've heard workers whose identities have been marginalized in some way talk about our desires to be more authentic and the barriers preventing us from doing so, asking for advice on how or whether to bring our full selves and searching for the right roles, policies, and companies that allow this full self to flourish. In private, however, beyond the walls of work and within the safety, trust, and comfort of community, I've witnessed friends and colleagues scoff at the idea of workplace authenticity, saying something along the lines of, yeah, right, or they don't want that, or they don't even know what that means. I wrote this book to have those quiet conversations out loud. The conversations about workplace authenticity I recognize wrestles with the reality that the more of ourselves we give, the more institutions take and take from our careers, health, and well-being, risking our livelihoods and our lives. The stickiness of the bring your full, authentic self to work narrative relies on the erasure and silence of workers, those most harmed by fair-weathered inclusion policies and practices. But we cannot understand how work works without talking to Black people and other people of color, people with disabilities, women, queer people, and especially those of us sitting at the intersections of these identities and more, the very same identities companies cyclically say they value, while targeting us with discrimination, bullying, abuse, and inequities in pay and opportunity. Authentic is more than a critique on the empty promise of being authentic at work. It's an invitation to question the structural realities of what it takes to be a person at work. This critique would not be possible without taking seriously the health and well-being of workers most impacted by harmful policies, performative practices, and opportunistic rhetoric about representation and inclusion. Insight two, collective access, not reasonable accommodations. I have a spinal cord injury and must take care of my body in a way that minimizes neuropathic pain flares. Before the global COVID-19 pandemic, my employer made it very difficult for me to meet my access needs. Remote work policies were restricted to 2 designated days per week. The conference room policy allowed teams to book rooms anywhere on campus, which made my meeting-to-meeting commute chaotic. My coworkers questioned and judged why I took on-campus meetings remotely at my desk, or carried a heating pad with me wherever I went, or why I fatigued so quickly walking from building to building. When a colleague tested positive for COVID-19, just one email shut down our whole campus. Around the country and the world, work moved online, school online, life online for years. Remote work and other so-called reasonable accommodations previously denied to disabled workers because it was too expensive, too complicated, or bad for productivity and morale, soon became standard procedure. Employers restructured jobs, made spatial modifications, and provided personal protective equipment. Relaxed policies allowed workers to reduce their schedules or flex their work hours. This restructuring did not reach everyone. The pandemic affected office workers and frontline service workers unevenly. People who could not work remotely bore the brunt of death and disease because employers and legislators failed to protect them. Still, the COVID-19 pandemic began an experiment of collective access at an unprecedented scale. the support and structure we need as disabled workers are not accommodations, as we've learned to call them. Our access needs must be met to do our jobs. It is unnecessary and prone to unchecked, unlawful discrimination for companies to define and determine what is reasonable. Without a doubt, how companies pivoted during the COVID-19 pandemic revealed what had always been possible to ensure disabled workers can meet our access needs. Unfortunately, all those learned lessons seem to have already been lost. Just a few years later, many employers have eliminated access practices, forced compliance through threats of termination, and enacted other punitive measures to constrain an empowered workforce writ large. Ableism hurts us all. Insight 3. No sector is immune to inequity. It's common to make for-profit companies, so-called corporate America, the boogeymen of inequitable, hostile workplaces. I've spent most of my career working in mission-driven organizations. Early in my career, I worked as a teacher and administrator in charter schools. I spent 5 years in the global health and development sector, and I worked at a women's-focused startup. Each organization grounded its work in a progressive mission for equity, be it in education, health, or business. But that did not exempt these industries from the very same practices of discrimination, bullying, and abuse, better known to characterize the for-profit sector. Institutions that contradict their own missions can corrupt the part of our authenticity fulfilled by mission-driven work. Instead of nurturing possibility, it breeds cynicism, not just toward one institution, but the entire sector. Authenticity isn't just who we are, but what we believe in, our mission and purpose in our careers. We must include practices and policies across sectors to better understand inequities and its impact on all workers. Insight 4. Being more authentic cannot change company culture. The phrase, bring your full, authentic self to work, is a clear and succinct reflection about what we as workers want. That's what any person would want. The space and safety to be themselves. We want to express ourselves without contorting who we are. This is especially true for workers subjected to historical inactive identity-based discrimination. Institutions often define authenticity by our markers of difference, the accoutrements of identity, our hairstyles, clothing, pronouns, assistive objects, religious paraphernalia, the words we choose and the order in which we use them. But inclusion takes more than wheelchair ramps, more than pronoun pins or inclusive dress codes. These are table stakes. As workers, we exchange our talent and time for wages. There are much larger institutional levers impacting our professional lives than self-expression. Wage theft, pay inequity, workplace fissuring, technological and managerial surveillance, occupational segregation, racism, sexism, and other forms of structural violence. Redefined as individual acts of self-expression, authenticity narratives abstract unjust and unlawful labor practices that perpetuate workplace discrimination. Insight 5. Community is our greatest resource. Employee resource groups, ERGs, are employee-led, identity-based groups that provide formal channels to connect and collaborate. These groups are sponsored by employers in that they are acknowledged, supported, and sometimes funded, although often inadequately so. ERGs are a lifeline for marginalized and underrepresented employees. No matter our rank, department, office location, state or region, we turn to ERGs for a place to belong. Pending the changing tide to corporate DEI programs, more than 90% of Fortune 500 companies have active ERGs today. I always found the resource part of employee resource groups a bit curious. Who are the resources for? As workers, whatever space we've carved out for ourselves belongs more and more to the business. Institutions rely on ERGs to support their workforce at large, demonstrate their commitment to diversity, and comply with federal EEO mandates. ERGs help institutions attract and recruit more people of color, women, and other marginalized professionals. Our lived experiences serve critical parts of the business function, as sensitivity readers, product innovation, and PR damage control. Do ERGs as we know them today have the capacity to agitate for the kind of protections we need as workers to be our full, authentic selves? I'm not talking about panels and potlucks, though these are essential for community building. But can ERGs provide safety for workers in the form of labor protections? ERGs are projects of representation. By design, their power to ensure material labor protections is limited. ERGs appear union-like, but cannot act in ways that are dealing with the organization. They cannot negotiate on the terms and conditions of employment. They cannot hold or act on or represent collective worker grievances. They cannot engage in any collective bargaining with the employer. Any organization-sponsored employee group will never be structured to truly empower its workforce. What do we need to be more authentic? We need community. We need protection. We need to define authenticity beyond projects of representation. We need nurturing professional relationships in service of good trouble. ERGs are not designed to provide what workers need to be truly authentic because they constrain our power to protect ourselves as workers. In a way, knowing their limits opens possibilities to imagine what we are already building beyond the institutional gaze. Look at all the ways we organize. Look at where we learn, listen, connect, innovate, advocate together. Look at our organizations, our friends, friends of friends, trusted whisper networks. We are the resources. Thank you so much for listening. I truly hope you enjoy Authentic.